This podcast of The Treatment is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. My guest, the director of the amazing City of God and the equally amazing adaptation of The Constant Gardener, is director Fernando Moraes. He, I think, sort of is an interesting combination of Hector Babenco, Jean-Luc Godard, and Gio Pontecorvo. So it's nice to have one man representing all three of those people right here with us. Fernando, thanks for doing the show.
Well, thank you.
But I feel like that because all the scenes in The Constant Gardener in the villages, in the slums, remind me, in addition to sort of bringing to mind City of God, also struck me very much as being like Godard as well with the handheld 16mm cameras.
Yeah, we tried to, instead of going to shoot, in real places with a big crew and everything, we went very small, like a documentary, so we could shoot in the middle of real places with people living their real lives, and nobody really knew that we were shooting a movie because we're so small. It's a good strategy, I think.
Now, if you can, for the audience, tell them what The Constant Gardener is about.
Well, it's the story of this British diplomat that gets involved with a very young girl. They get married, they move to Kenya, and after a period, she dies. And he has no clue, who killed her and why and what happened. So he tries to find out what was she doing, why she was killed. And behind this death, there's the pharmaceutical industry. So the film is the journey of this husband trying to find out, to find his wife again. In this journey, he finally understands his wife, and he falls deeply in love with her, but she's already dead. It's a very tragic and beautiful love story. It's also a political thriller.
You said this is the first Le Carré you read, but it's very different because it's a real attack on the corporate world. It's very much going after sort of corporate intervention and how corporations basically influence governments.
Yeah, that's the I think the main point of the film. Usually we think that governments runs our life, but actually the corporations, they run the government. That's the story. This association between corporations and government and. In this case, it's about pharmaceutical industry, which is a very powerful. They have a very powerful lobby, especially here in the U.S., as everybody knows.
Oh yes, yes, but around the world too. Definitely in Africa, where they basically do what they want, and that's very much a part of what this movie is about too, isn't it?
Yeah, the story is about this pharmaceutical industry using Africans as guinea pigs to test drugs, which is something that they still do. They do a lot. But in our case, in our films, it's about the pharmaceutical exploring Africa. But they do it everywhere, even here in the States. Yesterday I went to buy a little drug for headache here. It's so expensive, drugs in U.S. It's amazing. It's 3 or 4 times more expensive than is in Brazil, where I live. They really can they have the power to keep the prices really, really high. It's amazing how powerful they are.
I'm curious because given that you've done a lot of commercials in your life, when did you realize that you had this interest in showing how oppression works in movies?
Well, actually, before starting to work with in commercials or television, I've done a lot of television. I always wanted to do films, but in the 80s, when I started to work, it was very difficult to get financing for films in Brazil. So instead of trying to get financing and produce a film, I decided to go to move to television where I could produce nonstop. And now it's much easier to produce films in Brazil. So, 10 years ago, I decided to start doing features, and that's what I'm doing.
But the films you've made have been using people being oppressed as kind of a big part of the subject, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think it's also a coincidence. I've done City of God. Before City of God, I've done a very low-budget film in Brazil called Maids, about maids, which is an institution in the country. And then City of God and this one. Those three films are about a kind of social injustice in some way. But I don't think this is going to be my theme forever, you know. I might do a romantic comedy at some point, I don't know. If somebody offers me Harry Potter 6, I would consider.
Well, we should let people know about that. My guess is Fernando Moraes. He's ready to do Harry Potter 6, but right now we're talking about his new film, The Constant Gardener.
Okay, it's announced. Let's see what happens.
But one of the things I like about this movie, too, is that there's some really great playful stuff. I think one of the best things Ralph Fiennes has ever done is the scene where he's talking with his wife, played by Rachel Weisz, in the bathtub, and he's pretending to be Jacques Cousteau. That's a really wonderful scene.
And you know, that scene is totally improvised. This is something I like.
Was it?
Yeah, this is something I like to do a lot. I mean, in some scenes, when you don't have to tell a plot or something, I always ask the actors to be free to just add new lines and to improvise. And sometimes, instead of saying cut in the scene, I say, oh, keep going. So they, and this was the case in this sequence in the bathroom. When I said action, Rafe, he started to imitate Jacques Cousteau speaking in French, and it was so funny. So when we cut to Rachel, she was inside the bathtub. She was laughing so much because, I mean, we were not expecting Rafe to do that. You know, it was very spontaneous. And you watch the film and you feel it's real. You know.
Well, that's a big part of your movies too, isn't it? Having lots of spontaneous moments. You really live for that, don't you? You like that in your movies.
Yeah, I like it very much, especially in scenes where you have to establish relationships. I think that improvising, it's a very good method, you know, to create chemistry between the actors. And you always get, when you let the actors just bring their lines, and you really get very special and very... interesting in intense moments.
I'm glad you said that about relationships, though, because in that scene that we're talking about, we can sort of see why she fell in love with him, because it's a relationship kind of about people using each other at first, but you can see her falling in love with him there in that scene. I think that's really important in terms of the way his interest in her plays out throughout the rest of the film.
Yeah, you know, this relationship between the main characters, for me, was the most difficult thing in this project, because she's a very young girl, and when they first met, she challenges him in front of an audience. She's very aggressive, and so I was always asking myself, why would this guy be involved with such a girl, you know? And, well, okay, she was Rachel Weisz, beautiful, but anyway, it was hard to... So we really need to create chemistry between them, and so I think the way they played, it's what really made the relationship work, you know. Reading the script, you don't believe in that relationship very much. But then with Rafe and Rachel Weisz playing those parts, when I've seen them playing, I say, no, this is believable, but it was really because of their performances.
But it's that thing you were saying, too, before about spontaneity and letting moments happen, so the actors develop relationships too, don't they, on camera?
Definitely. You know, and I did something that was very, I mean, it was almost by chance, but was a great idea in the end of the day. 1 week before starting to shoot, I wanted to have some material in video, you know, like if the couple, they had this costume to record each other when they're alone in their home. So I spent like four or five hours in one of our sets, a place that should be her home. Mm-hmm. And during 4 hours, they improvised a lot of things, you know, a lot of dialogues and situations. And there's some of those moments in the film. And Rachel was doing the camera. Sometimes Rachel was doing the camera. Sometimes Rafe was doing the camera. It was just like the two actors, me and the DOP, and that was it. And we spent like the whole afternoon doing it. And this 5 hours really helped them to understand each other, to establish the relationship. So when we start to shoot the movie, we had done so much. I mean, the couple had talked so much that, I mean, the chemistry was already set, you know, established. And the other thing that I like to do is shoot in real location with the real life happening at the same time. So you're shooting and things are the real life is happening around you. And So in this film, there's a lot of sequences. There's some sequences in the slum, then in the big market, in a morgue, in maternity. We were shooting a scene inside a maternity, and around was around us. I mean, everything was real people having their real kids, and we were shooting using just two, three beds. You know, I like to do that.
So I got to say, the scenes you in those slums in the, I guess, the favelas in Kenya, it just are kind of amazing. They're so full of life that I kind of wanted to see more of that stuff. I mean, because they take on a life of their own outside of the main storyline.
Yeah, no, it's true. There's a lot of you see a lot of real people, as I was mentioning, real people in their real life. This, I mean, watching the film, you have a sense of what is the life inside of this big slum in Nairobi. There's a slum called Kibera. 800,000 people lives in this place in the middle of the city.
Did you have the same sort of sense of it being dangerous in the way that it was being in Rio and those down there too?
No, it's much more relaxed, you know, because in Rio, the favelas are controlled by drug dealers.
Right.
So when you're shooting, you see, I mean, boys hanging out with guns, and it's there's a pressure. You're always under certain pressure. I mean, I was focused on what I was doing, but anyway. And in Kibera, you feel totally safe and protected and very welcome. Everybody, I mean, treats you very well. And at some point, I mean, one day we were shooting a big scene. It was a theater scene, etc. And we finished before the schedule. I mean, we were 2 hours ahead of schedule. So I asked Rachel and Hubert, the other actor, if they wanted to just walk around Kibera. And they said, yes, let's just walk around. So it was only her, him, me, and the cameraman and the sound guy. We only us five. We walked for almost 2 hours in Kibera.
Wow.
And we have the scenes in the film. It's when we see her walking around the – that was not scripted. We decided to do it because we felt it was so safe to be alone in that place, only us, and it worked. I mean, you feel very comfortable, very safe.
Talking to Fernando Moraes, his new film, he's the director of The Constant Gardener. But the sense of poverty there was just so much more overwhelming than it was being in the favelas in Rio, wasn't it?
Yeah, which was a surprise for me. Yeah, when I went to Nairobi, I thought it would be easy to shoot in a slum because I was used to. Besides City of God, I've been doing a television series in the slum in Brazil, so I'm very used to shoot inside slums. But Kibera was really shocking because it's much, much more, it's much poorer than the favelas in Rio. Because in Rio, of course, it's a very poor population, but they have running water, television, electricity, the minimum, you know.
Sure.
And in Nairobi, there's nothing, no sanitation, no running water, no, they have to walk like 2 miles a day to get water and it's a very, very hard condition of life. I mean, they don't have furniture in their houses. I was really, really impressed. I mean, everybody was really impressed with that kind of life. So immediately when we got there, the producer, Simon Cheney Williams, he decided to start a charity. And now this charity is really working a lot, called the Constant Gardener Charity. You can check it in the internet. And he's building a lot of water tanks in the slum, and he built two schools, and he's buying a bus for transportation for the people in a certain area. I mean, this project is now, I mean, it's going to go for at least for the next 5 years.
God, that's great to hear, because so many times, you know, film companies go into places like that and they do their business and then they disappear.
Yeah, usually when we go to a place like this, everybody gets very touched, but being touched doesn't change anything. And I'm very glad that Simon took the time and the energy to, you know, to make something happen. And so now this charity is going on, and we're all very happy.
We're going to take a break and come back with more with Fernando Moraes. He's not doing a Harry Potter movie. We're going to talk about The Constant Gardener. Yet! More to come. Miss the Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. My guest is the prodigious director, Fernando Moraes. His new film is The Constant Gardener, an adaptation of John le Carré's novel. When did you come to the decision that you wanted to include improvisations and spontaneity in everything you do? Because that's a key part of the way you work, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that was... Well, I did a bit of that in domestic as maids, but yes. mostly in City of God, because in City of God I was working with non-professional actors. Instead of giving the script to the actors in City of God to prepare them, I would always explain the intention of the scene, and I would let them bring their own lines, and little by little I was trying to get the right shape for each scene. So it was... All the process to get to the final version was improvising the lines, and it worked very well in City of God. So now in The Constant Gardener, I tried to do the same, but with very professional actors, but it worked as well, I think. But of course, I mean, I'm talking about a couple of scenes, because most of the film was really written by the writer, of course, and we had to say the lines exactly as written, because it's a very complex plot.
What's the book very much about? Guilt, and about somebody being awakened to act after it's too late.
Yeah, well, and it's, there's always, he researches a lot to write his books. So especially now, I mean, each book is about a subject that he researches for 2 years. Sometimes he travels and then he writes the book. So he knows exactly what he's writing about. In this case, I mean, he did a very, very deep research on pharmaceutical industry to write the book. And it's very interesting. When you read the book, sometimes he stops telling the story and he adds like whole chapters only with numbers and cases, real cases and real numbers on pharmaceutical. It's a story, but at the same time, the book feels like a report on pharmaceutical industry.
The book is like journalism, but the book is also very angry, too. There's a lot of anger in that book.
Yeah, I think John le Carré is getting more and more angry and bitter, I mean, as the time goes, you know. But he's very funny at the same time. He's very angry, but at the same time, you know, British, they use this anger as humor, as sarcasm. So it's a very nice guy to be with.
It must have been fascinating, too, for you to take that kind of material, which sort of goes in two different directions, and find a way to kind of make it all come together.
Yeah, you mean there's this love story and the political thriller? That's what you
yes,
mean?
Yes, absolutely, yes. And also put that sort of sense of taking real-life incidents and bringing them into that, too.
Yeah. You know, in the beginning, I didn't know if I was doing a romance or a thriller, and it took me a while to understand the film, because it really has two sides. And I thought in the beginning that the film would be much more political, but in the end, watching the film today, I think it's more like a love story with this political thriller as a background.
I want to talk to you about the casting, because you said that Ralph Fiennes was committed, but you didn't have an actress committed when you first started, right?
No, I've spoken to lots of actresses. It was a long process, to be honest.
Because a lot of the search for an actress in this got reported in the press. Did that affect the way you were looking, too?
No, actually not. The thing is that I called a couple of very young actresses, as I was saying, I asked them to read some parts and some lines. And my feeling is that a teenager doing what Tessa, the character, was doing was just like a teenager bad behaving, you know? Was just like a teenager. I mean, I don't believe a 19-year-old girl would kill herself or would die for a cause. I mean, so I decided to go for a bit older woman who really know who she was and what she was up to, and you know, more mature. That's why. So in the middle of the process, I stopped talking to young girls and start talking to older actresses.
Are you interested? Have you been interested in films that are about change, about trying to bring change to areas? Because I wonder if Pichot was kind of an influence on you as well.
Yeah, well, I do like, but I really think I'll do any kind of film, you know. I've done, for 10 years, I've done commercials. And when you do commercials for television, you do all kinds of things, you know, from special effects to documentary-style things. So I think I feel myself very comfortable to move around different styles and different But it just happened that the films that I've done were about something urgent subjects.
Sure, but it's fascinating because the commercials are so much about sort of pleasure, a lot of the commercials you made, about people enjoying themselves. And that's fascinating to me to see you go from that kind of film to the kind of feature films that you've made.
Yeah. Well, the commercial for me was important because that's where I learned how to shoot. I mean, how to frame, how to use the sound. And doing commercials was like a school for me, you know. It's a very good school because you have to do, I mean, tell short stories in a very short period of time and with a lot of people watching what you're doing and watching frame by frame of your work. It's a great school doing commercials, but now I don't do it anymore.
Well, one of the great things about the commercials, and I think we can also see in the movies that you make too, is you get a real thrill out of filmmaking. I mean, just watching In the Constant Gardener, you're shifting film stock from 35, I think, to 16. Just watching that happen and going from one kind of framing to another, you get a real pleasure out of using the tools of filmmaking, don't you?
Yeah, I think because we shoot, especially, I mean, the way I've done commercials, I've done a lot. I mean, I was doing like 4, 5, 6 films a month for 10 years, you know. So I've done like 700 or 800. I had all kinds of experiences, you know. I've shot under the sea in helicopters and I set fires in buildings doing commercials. I've done so I feel myself very, very secure to do whatever, you know. Wherever it takes, because almost all the situations that I have to shoot when I read scripts is I've done something similar already, you know. So that makes me very confident of trying things, experimenting things, because I've done only 3 features, but I shot a lot in my life, you know.
My guest is Fernando Moraes. His new film, of course, is The Constant Gardener. He also directed City of God. And one of the things that's kind of fascinating to me is the way you kind of use introducing a character just by the face, by the first expression. I mean, you do that a lot in The Constant Gardener. You did that a lot in City of God. Just that first time we meet a character, that expression being a real introduction. And I wonder if that was a style that you developed for film or is it something you got out of your commercial work as well?
Yeah, no, I think it's something, it's just instinct. It's nothing planned or, you know, it's just, in this film, in The Constant Gardener, I mean, the scene when we first see Justin, Rafe's character, it's a long, long close-up in his face when he gets the news that his wife was found dead. And it's a very nice shot, I think. This case was a very good idea to introduce him with this 1.5 minute close-up.
But you do that with Rachel, too. There's kind of this pop cut to her as she's haranguing, as she's attacking him at that lecture. And you do that a lot where you just get this immediate sort of like close-up on somebody's face as kind of an introduction, which is, I think, a really intimate way to make a film.
When you're editing, I mean, you feel that you need that and that's how it works. I really do films in the cutting room. That's my feeling. I go to the set just to get material, and then I really understand the film and do the film in the cutting room. That's my feeling. I don't do storyboards or it's all really planned and done on post. Well, there are some directors that plans frame by frame and each cut and they shoot precisely as they plan. I didn't do that. I go to the set, I perform the scene and shoot in different angles, different ways. And then when we finish shooting, that's when I really start trying to find and do the film.
That's fascinating because I imagine that probably was the case with City of God because it seemed to be very much a film that you were discovering, that you were finding as you were making it. But it's interesting, too, to find out that that's also the way you made The Constant Gardener, which seems fairly meticulously worked out, despite the moments of improvisation we were talking about.
No, actually, before this version that we've seen, we tried 6 very different versions with different beginnings and totally different approaches. You know, it took us, me and Claire Simpson, the editor, like 3 or 4 months to find this final version. We first edited the film in a linear way. The story was told in a linear way, you know.
And, wow.
And it was very, very boring. we watched the film and we hated it. We say, wow, Claire, what are we going to do now? It's a bad film. And so we started to try to find a different structure to, you know. And that's when we decided to, I mean, our fifth try was putting Tessa's death in the beginning, like the first scene, start the film showing that she's going to die. And it worked. It's fantastic because there's a scene, for instance, when Tessa, this character, she as I mentioned, she challenges Justin in front of a big audience and she's aggressive. And when you see the scene in the beginning, like in the opening of the film, you see it in a certain way. But if you see it after you know that she's going to die, it's much more interesting, you know. And then when you see all her scenes, but you know she's going to die in a few minutes, it changes everything. It was almost magical when we just changed this and then we changed another scenes. And all the film, it seems that it came to the right place.
By starting it that way, you make it much more of a mystery, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, the idea of her death in the film, it's not a surprise. I mean, in the first version, it was like a surprise. In the middle of the film, the main character would die. And we thought, wow, it's very interesting because the audience would be surprised. But it didn't happen for some reason. So we decided, once the surprise wasn't that interesting, we decided to put it in the beginning, and it really, I mean, it worked.
That's amazing that film is such, you actually experiment as you're making it. I like that because all these things that we're sort of talking about, the way that you use faces, they all lend themselves to your just moving things around until you find out something that works, given your kind of shooting style.
Yeah, well, the way we shoot, me and Cesar Scialoni, the DOP with whom I work with, is a bit different from the usual way, because we don't break the scenes, you know. We usually perform the scene from the top to the end, and we record, I mean, everything from in different angles, but we always have the whole scene from the, you know, and we don't interrupt actors, you know. So once they start their scene, they go to the... And it's very organic, and it's good. It's good for the actors because they don't have to hit marks. They are very free to do the whole thing, and they, you know, and it's very good for the editing because you have, I mean, all the words in all the angles and all. It's so I really can find the film in the cutting room.
Well, we're out of time. It's so great having you here. Thank you so much for doing this, Fernando.
Thank you very much.
My guest is Fernando Moraes. His new film is The Constant Gardener. Our technical director and editor is Bob Carlson, with technical assistant Milosik Wojcik at Carnegie Recording Studios in New York. Mary Holdridge produces the program. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
You've been listening to KCRW's The Treatment. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including The Business, a look deep inside the business of entertainment with Hollywood's top dealmakers, filmmakers, moguls, artists, and agents. Hosted by Claude Brodesser. Check out the podcast of The Business at kcrw.com.